You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 563, recorded on Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. Wisdom and Folly. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. On our show today, we continue our discussion of the book Eat That Frog, zeroing in on chapters 19 and 20. Only one chapter to go after these two. Create large chunks of time and develop a sense of urgency. This is a book about productivity, and we'll be talking about disciplining yourself to keep appointments and getting back to work. We have for our picks of the week, Sally has a great pick on Chrome bookmarks. I talk about iCloud Drive for you Apple users. We have some great community feedback, and of course, our video of the week, this week from Martin Luther College. All that and more coming right up. We are back again, Sally. How are you today for episode 563?
I am chilling, actually. It's 66 degrees here in lovely New Ulm, Minnesota, cloudy New Ulm, Minnesota. Our last full day in Minnesota for quite a long time, I believe, but we're enjoying the cool weather. How about
still
you?
In Flandreau?
Yeah, we are in Flandreau, heading to the Milwaukee area tomorrow to move our freshman son in at Wisconsin Lutheran College. Looking forward to that.
Wow, your baby.
My baby boy.
Empty
nesters.
In college.
Yeah, it was really poignant. We went to church this Sunday, and the pastor up at Grace in Hutchinson, Minnesota, it's Pastor Greg Tobison, a friend of ours, actually. He preached on the Proverbs verses that were part of the readings for this past Sunday. I think it was Pentecost 13. And it was about wisdom and folly. And he said, you know, just to give you some background, up until this point in Proverbs, it's been a father giving his son advice as he heads off to college and out of the nest and blah, blah, blah. And boy, it hit me hard. We've been bringing boys to church with us for 23 years, and now we're done. Our work is done in that regard, and we're going to let them fly. So crazy.
Set them on their course and pray.
Absolutely.
That's what we do. Mm-hmm. Speaking of wisdom and folly, that's a great, I think that's a great lead into our study of the book or our reading through of the book, Eat That Frog. I think we found some nuggets of wisdom and a few nuggets of folly along the way. This is a book about productivity written by Brian Tracy. This was recommended in a podcast that I listened to. In fact, I don't even remember the name of the podcast or the podcast that it was recommended on. But I'd say it hasn't been always kind of in line with maybe how a Christian would approach stewardship and time and talents. But I think in almost every chapter, there's something that we can kind of grab a hold of and implement, just these kind of little bite-sized chunks of information that we can apply to our personal and professional ministries.
Absolutely. And today we're nearing the end of the book. We're tackling chapters 19 and 20. So 19 was create large chunks of time and 20 develop a sense of urgency. Both had me feeling inadequate, Martin. I'm going to be honest. I love the ideas that he's sharing, but I feel like it's really hard to achieve. So I think maybe keeping these kind of topics in front of us all the time just helps us remind ourselves and get into good habits yet again. So,
yep. One thing that it reminded me as I was reading through these chapters is that everybody's workflow and everybody's responsibilities are a little bit different. So there's not going to be a one size fits all. That's why I say kind of a pick and choose, mm-hmm. and some of the high, you know, concepts are good to adopt. And there's definitely things that, you know, wouldn't work for me as we've gone through the book, and there are other things that actually have made a difference. So I think that's, you know, it's been worth the time. So creating large chunks of time sounds a little odd. If only we could create time. We're given time, and we are given the responsibility, however, of managing that time. So what's Brian saying here in chapter 19 that had your had your attention?
Well, you know, I didn't look back, but we recently talked about something very similar. He's basically saying to schedule time with yourself, block off time for regular tasks that you need to accomplish, and then have the discipline to actually do those things during those scheduled times. So he gave examples of salespeople needing to make phone calls to clients or potential clients, and that, you know, a salesman might block off from 10 to 11 a.m. each day to make those phone calls. And it may not be their favorite frog to eat, but they do it in a very disciplined way. They focus only on that kind of thing during that 10 to 11 a.m. hour. Other examples like doing your email or working through your email. We've talked about that multiple times in the book. But then he also gave examples like exercise for 30 minutes a day at a set period of time, or read a book for 15 minutes each night before you go to bed. Whatever types of regular habits you have, you know, set aside a time to do that and do it in a disciplined fashion.
One thing that struck me in reading those suggestions is the importance of the calendar. It's very difficult, I think, to structure your day with the back of a napkin kind of approach. I think it's important to have a calendar, not only for the, you know, the appointments that you have, but for these kinds of things, you know, this focused time, this carve out time where you're blocking off a certain amount of time. I think last week we talked about the 90 minute blocks in the two 90 minute blocks in the morning. I've started, that's one thing that I think was a good takeaway for me, is to try and block out not just appointments, of course, so they don't forget those and know where to go and who I'm meeting with and the materials that I need, but also block out those times where this is what I'm doing during that time. I'm making an appointment with myself, so to speak.
And he also makes the point to say that you need to plan and prepare the work you're going to do in that time slot in advance, so that when you arrive at that time, you have what you
need
to be productive. Right? You get focused, you eliminate all those distractions, you spend that chunk of time, whatever it may be that you've allocated to this regular work, and you get stuff done. You eat frogs.
You make every minute count, he
That's
says.
Right. That's right.
One thing that he said that he does, and I don't know how viable this is for everybody, but for those who can, he talks about working from home in the morning for 2 or 3 hours. And I think, you know, in some of our listeners' lives, that's certainly a possibility. I think for, let's say, a pastor, that's certainly a possibility if there's a home office or a way to do that where you're kind of out of the traffic pattern and you're a little bit secluded. If you need to, you know, spend some focused time in a sermon study or writing a sermon or whatever on a Thursday morning or whenever that is, that's not a bad idea, is to try and find that quiet place and then go into the office and have, you know, your office hours or whatever, interact with other folks.
Yep, it reminded me of a book that I read last year, Martin, actually over Christmas holidays, 2016 into 2017. I read The Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. I think it might have been suggested by Pastor Rob Gunther. And it basically was take an extra hour in your morning time to work on some things. For instance, it talked about reading a book for 15 minutes of that hour or whatever.
That was also, I think, in What's Best Next. That was a recommendation there. Get up an hour early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I did do that for a while. Again, it's all in habit forming and actually being focused and discipline. It's hard for me. I like planning things. I like setting aside that hour and making my calendar look real motivating.
You're a planner.
But I don't really like following through all the time and having that discipline to keep the appointment with myself.
That's the challenge, right?
It's hard. Yeah. It's very hard. Here's another thing I found hard, or it just reminded me of that fact. He says in that make every minute count discussion, he says, when you fly on business, you can create your office in the air by planning your work thoroughly beforehand. When the plane takes off, you can work nonstop for the entire flight. So I'm traveling, I'm flying, whatever it may be, and I know I need to accomplish these things, and I'm going to have this time where I'm just sitting there, I'm going to get that done, and then I really want to take a nap or read a magazine instead. So again, it kind of just speaks to, it's really fun to plan it, but it's really hard to follow through.
I think travel's hard in general. I think I've had very high expectations, and high dreams of getting a lot done, you know, in the hotel room or whatever. Exactly. And by the time you're there and just kind of the rigor of travel and the stress involved, it's like, yeah, I don't think so.
So I kind of left the chapter thinking, wow, Brian Tracy's a better man than me because he's a lot more disciplined. And that's what it kind of comes down to. It's tiring to travel, or it's, you know, there's things that come up and interrupt that 90-minute block that you so wanted to accomplish or whatever. But yet you pick yourself up and you try again the next time. And some days it works for you and stuff. So, you know, forgive yourself if it's not perfect, I guess.
Yep. Which is somewhat contrary to the next chapter, Develop a Sense of Urgency, where he is really talking about this constant voice that should be in your head to get back to work, do it now, get back to work. You know, just little reminders that, almost guilt you into, boy, if you're just sitting still, or if you're moving even slowly, not a good thing.
Right. And I just want to tell you, I bought the workbook, and he has sheets in the workbook that you are supposed to cut out and tape up in various places. Do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now. And then back to work, back to work, back to. So if it's not enough to keep it on your brain, you get sheets of paper taped all over your house or workspace and remind yourself of that. I'm just saying, maybe he's on the course for some heart problems in the future with that kind of nonstop
premature
effort.
Gray at the very least.
Yes. Yeah. So do it now. Relax a little, Brian, and yeah, enjoy life. Although he does make great points. I'm sure those people do progress rapidly in careers and all that kind of stuff. But I would just have a hard time believing they don't get burned out with that sense of urgency.
I think one of the points he's trying to make is you need to get into it. You need to start, and you need to kind of get in what he calls the flow. You kind of get in the moment so that time, you know, is not, you know, something that you recognize as even passing, that you're just kind of at your optimal performance level. Mm-hmm. And that's where things get done faster versus kind of the micro, you know, task switching and, you know, all the distractions. If you're in the moment, if you're, you know, you're not distracted, you can get a lot of stuff done in a very short amount of time because you're really focused. You're not having to regain attention, to rethink things. You're just kind of, you're sprinting. And I think that's kind of the big point here.
Yeah. And, you know, just reflecting back, you probably would agree with me. I think we've all had days where everything just comes together and you're just humming. You're just, it's happening for you. But I think those days for me come after a lot of days of drudgery where things aren't coming together and I'm not in the flow or whatever. But I still have to get through those days to finally start, you know, things happening. So it takes a combination of things, I think.
Yeah. One thing that has helped me, and I think I mentioned this in previous shows and discussions on this book, is the bullet journal approach has really helped me feed that voice saying, do it now, because there's some gratification in checking things off a list. But there's also some encouragement there saying, hey, there's stuff on the list. Hey, there's stuff to do. I can grab one of these. I can do one of these. Hey, this is kind of moved from week to week without any activity. It would be great if I could, you know, just dig in, spend a morning, even put it on the calendar and saying, hey, this has gone on long enough. This is a frog. This needs to get done. And that's the only bullet on your day. So the tool itself, I think, is helping me a little bit with this. He talks also about develop a reputation. You know, as one of those guys or gals who gets this important work done quickly and well. So when people give you work or there's an expectation of you doing something, there's a high degree of confidence that the job is going to get done. And that's important to be able to count on the people that you work with and that there's attention being paid and that you are, you're faithful to your promises, your commitments. Because I think it's very easy to say yes, 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 yes. But if you're very focused on, you know, what you say yes to, and we've talked about that in the past too, then it becomes a little bit easier to focus on the important stuff and really kind of gain this reputation that, hey, if I say yes, this is going to get done and it's going to be done well and it's going to be done on time.
Yeah, the title of the chapter, Develop a Sense of Urgency, it's all about fast, 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 it seems. But that and well part, the part where you're delivering, but you're delivering quality work, is kind of the make or break in the situation. Yep. You can be fast, but sloppy, and people aren't going to respect or have a very high opinion of the work that you do. So, and part of it is being able to say no to other things, like you said, being very focused so that the things you do say yes to, you are able to give it the attention it needs.
Yeah. And if you're not answering your phone or email, you're not getting many requests anymore. It's one strategy. All right. I think that's going to do it for chapters 19 and 20. We just have one chapter left, Sally. Where has the summer gone?
Yep. We've been eating all those frogs and feeling full. So, yeah, one more chapter. Chapter 21 wraps up the book. There's some resources we can point to as well, but it's titled Single Handle Every Task. That sounds like a good idea. So, looking forward to that.
Very good. All right, let's move along in our show's agenda with our picks of the week. What do you got this week?
I have an article that I came across today from Lifehacker. It's titled The Ultimate Guide to Organizing Your Messy Chromebook. I'm sorry, your messy Chrome bookmarks is what I meant to say. So this is the bookmarks bar in Chrome. If you use the Chrome browser and maybe use other browsers and rely heavily on the bookmarks bar as well. But this is specific to Chrome because there are some Chrome extensions and things that they recommend. But certainly there's some discipline type things that you could adopt with your bookmarks bar. Martin, I don't know if you use the bookmarks bar much, but I personally make heavy use of my Chrome bookmarks
I do
bar.
Too.
I have folders and folders and folders and subfolders and all kinds of stuff. And I actually use the same Chrome login for my personal computer. So
yep.
I have
so
folders for home and folders for work and folders for my phone and all of that. So this was a very appropriate article for me to dig into. And I was interested to read some of the productivity tips they have. The number one that they mentioned kind of as an aside is that you can go to your Chrome bookmark manager by using Control Shift and the letter O. And did I know that I had a Chrome bookmark manager? No, I did not. So, boom, that was a really great revelation for me right there. And one of the things that they recommended is possibly using like some hashtag terms as you're naming your Chrome bookmarks. And then from the Chrome bookmark manager, you can search on those hashtag terms.
Oh, I see that. A little search bar up there.
So,
yes, sir.
Pretty sweet stuff. And they did mention that Firefox has the ability to add tags to the bookmarks in Firefox automatically.
Oh, cool. Organization.
But, hint, hint, Google, maybe you need to add that capability to Chrome as well. But yeah, I can see tagging the bookmarks to be really helpful. I pretty much rely on folders right now to do that. They get into other things like shortening your bookmarks to just the browser icon. So for Trello, I know that icon and I just have that icon showing, and I do that by actually deleting the words associated with the bookmark. So it did say Trello and have the link when I save the bookmark. If you just get rid of the word Trello in, you know, the text area for saving the title of the bookmark, it'll just use the browser icon. And so it saves some screen real estate there, especially if you have a really busy browser toolbar, that's pretty helpful. I do the same with my Google Drive icon as well. And then they get into, like I said, different extensions, ways to get organized with your folder structure and things. They even suggest that you can use If This Then That, IFTTT, that website to, and now I started a video on their page. Let me see if I can pause that so we don't get noise from that. To trigger things. So let's say every time you add a bookmark, you also want to write it to a spreadsheet in Google Drive or whatever. You could use If This Then That to do that kind of thing as well. So lots of ideas here. I think you want to pick and choose. If you did them all, you'd be real confused by the results, I think. But, you know, zero in on a methodology, a browser extension or a tab. Page, perhaps. We've talked about one tab in the past where you can have a page that comes up with all the different links that you want to save around a topic or whatever, and you could easily share that. They also mentioned things like saving your bookmarks on something like Pinboard, Martin. I think that's what you use.
That's what I use.
They mentioned Pinterest, and I actually started saving campground bookmarks on Pinterest. So I have a board dedicated to just campgrounds that are potential for us to visit in the future. And I can easily go back and find those links on that board rather than having to remember what I was looking at in a certain area or whatever. So lots of great ideas here. And the bonus is I learned that Lifehacker and Wells Tech have something in common by reading this article, and that is their header image is the same one that I used for Wells Tech just a couple of weeks ago, an image of a person on a Mac and looking at their telephone. And so shout out to Pixabay for having great stock imagery that's available free. And within the Creative Commons license can be used in that way. And yeah, shout out to us for using the same imagery as good old Lifehacker. You know, that's the quality that you get from Wells Tech.
That's right. Each and every episode, handcrafted farm to table. All right. Good deal. Yeah, I love the bookmarks bar. I use that and I use Pinboard. When I use Pinboard, I primarily use it for sharing bookmarks. I learned something new about Pinboard the other day, and I think it was Delicious, which used to be a social bookmark sharing site. I think one of the founders of Delicious actually started Pinboard and said, because when Delicious was, I think it was bought by Yahoo or something like that, and they just kind of let it fade off into the sunset, went out and did Pinboard. And his, I think it was him, he was basically wanted to do as bare bones of sharing as you could. And that's really kind of what Pinboard is. There's nothing really fancy about it. It's mostly text-based and just kind of does the job. And he does charge for it. I think it's $11, I want to say, a year. But I don't mind paying for that because that keeps it going, keeps adding features and keeps everything up and secure and everything else. So lots of good stuff out there. But I live by Chrome. I wish I use an iPhone and an iPad, and I use Safari, which is hard. You can't jump
default
to another default, browser on either of those devices, and that's the problem because your bookmarks are stuck in Chrome, and Safari has its own bookmark engine too. So, do you use Chrome then to kind of get your bookmarks over there? How do you do that?
I do that more on my iPad, where I'm more into the browser experience or whatever, but on my phone, I usually am not using it for heavy duty browsing that I need my bookmarks for.
Yep, it's really helpful. Okay, good tip, great tip, and good article there. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick of the week is kind of a takeoff. I don't know, was it last week I talked about the Photos app, maybe a couple of weeks ago. This is kind of an add-on, and this is again for Apple users. And this is a cloud file sharing pick called iCloud Drive. For those of you that use Apple products, know that iCloud is kind of a big part of the operating system. It's where your backups go for iPhone and for your iPad. It's basically a Dropbox / Google Docs or Google Drive competitor. And I think it started out really slow and really bad. It had a really bad reputation. But with the latest, I think with the latest keynote Apple had earlier this year, they announced some great improvements. And I am really impressed with it. I've begun to use it. I use mostly Mac products at home, but they also have a Windows client as well for iCloud. One of the neat things about iCloud, and I don't know that all cloud services do this, is if you have family sharing turned on, which is a feature within within the Apple products, you need your Apple ID and you can have a family set up and they can share resources, they can share apps that you purchase and books and videos, and all those things can be shared, but also iCloud Drive storage can be shared. And you have to get a certain level. I think it's the, let me pull it up here. I think you have to be at the, oh, I got family sharing turned on here. I think it's the 200 gigabyte level. So they've got the 5 gig, which is free, 50 gig, which is 99 cents a month, 200 gig, which is $3 a month. And at that point, it's shareable. So if you pay your $3 a month, you get 200 gigabytes, but you can share with all your family members. And they can also, you know, do all their backups, store their photos, music, all that kind of stuff can go up there as well. And then there's also a 2 terabyte plan, which was one of the pieces of news that they launched, because it used to be 1 terabyte. That's $10 a month for 2 terabytes. And that's actually a pretty good deal when you do the math, 2 terabytes of storage. One of the neat things I really like about iCloud Drive is the way it works with the Mac, because there's a setting, you know, on the computer that says if you get low on hard disk space, and you know, hard disk space or you know, flash storage that comes on these machines is fairly expensive, so you don't always want to spend the extra dollars to get the, you know, the 500 or the 1 terabyte drive of flash storage. So sometimes you're working with, let's say, 256 gigabytes or whatever, and that can get filled up pretty quickly. If you have iCloud Drive storage set to back that stuff up, it will actually take some stuff off of your computer, put it in the cloud, freeing up that local disk space, which is kind of neat. So it kind of does some smart analysis of your drive and takes those, you know, rarely used files or those files that just kind of live there untouched and takes them off. Not that, but you can still see them. So there's a little thumbnail there that says, hey, you've got this file. It comes up in search and so on and so forth, but stores it up in the cloud. And then you can bring it down if at some point in the future you need it. So kind of great way to expand your disk storage without paying the extra dollars for that. But so that's one of the nice features. There are a couple things, and it works the same way as Dropbox does. It does a syncing. You can go to the web version. You can see all your files. You can upload, download. Those kinds of things are all there. Two drawbacks right now, and I think they're working on both of these, to kind of get parity with Dropbox and, you know, Box and Google Drive and those kinds of applications. Folder sharing they don't support, which is kind of a bummer because I use that when I share folders for presentations and such. So I'll just create a folder and say, here's all the resources and the presentation and those kinds of things. So if they don't do that, you can share files, but you can't share folders at this point. And also the on the device side of things, because iCloud syncs with your devices too, your iPhone and your iPad. Use the Files app, they renamed that, the Files app, does not let you download your files on LTE or on cellular. You have to be on Wi-Fi for that to happen, which is a really a big shortcoming if you want to have some portability with this. So those two things I hope get fixed pretty soon. But the stability, I've been using it for some time now. The stability, the speed, I mean, it just kind of works in the background, and the sync is real fast. Just really impressed with, you know, they've kind of got their act together at this point. If they can, you know, tighten up those two drawbacks that I mentioned, and you pair that with family sharing, you've got really a nice solution that can be extended across your family for a pretty reasonable price. So that's iCloud Drive along with family sharing. And I've got two links in the show notes, one from iMore.com, which is a great Apple site for kind of tutorials and tips and tricks. They have a great one on iCloud Drive. And then the Apple.com site for family sharing, which is a nice summary of what that's all about if you want to take advantage of that. So a couple tips and picks for you Apple users out there.
Great. Great stuff, Martin. I am smiling as I realize while you're talking how quickly your perspective can change. There are a couple of touch points that you emphasize that would have a real stop for me. One of them is that concept of the background uploading when your drive gets really full or whatever. I have been stung multiple times in the last 2 months of living on the road and relying on cellular coverage almost exclusively by things doing their job in the background and costing me gigs and gigs and gigs of data. That's pretty precious to somebody that's relying on it. So I just have a new perspective on that. And I would guess there are others that probably use cell coverage predominantly for their internet access that would feel the same way. The other is that concept of it being throttled on LTE. That would keep me from using it, basically, because I'm typically not on Wi-Fi. So, you know, and right. I think over time, more and more of these things will become more ubiquitous to us, even those of us that are living off a cell. But right now, in this day and age, those are challenging words. So interesting perspective.
Yeah, I suppose you have other concerns or not concerns, but considerations being always on that kind of, you know, if you don't have good Wi-Fi and wherever it is you're staying, that you do have some caps and you can drive that up with the download of a Netflix movie, for instance.
Right. Exactly. You just have to be really careful. And it's interesting, you know, the things I've learned, like my phone, if I'm watching, it doesn't go toward the same cap as if I'm tethering my computer off my phone. So I don't know. It's just been a real learning experience. And you know, things you were saying, it's a different world for me.
Yeah.
I would have different.
We're going to start seeing, I think, some changes in that area. And we already have, depending on who your cell provider is. Sometimes some of those services are not charged. So if there's a relationship with Netflix or Hulu or one of those types of services, and I know a number of them do, whenever you're streaming that stuff, you're not getting charged. So I think there's going to be some partnerships, and it's going to be difficult to kind of keep track of it all, but there are, those
it
relationships are going to exist. So.
Yeah, right now, if you have AT&T, you're going to be able to get the DirecTV now at a discounted rate.
What we have.
That's kind of built in there.
We do that, right? Okay. Sally, I think we have a little bit of community feedback today.
We do. And I first wanted to give a shout out to the board members of the Christ in Media. It's kind of a think tank group that's originated out of Bethany College, headed by Dr. Tom Custer. And I was fortunate enough to meet with them for an hour of their board meeting this past weekend and just share a little bit about what we do on Wells Tech. And I guess it was interesting, Martin, one of the first questions or comments was, you guys have never run out of ideas, and how do you always come up with new things? And I'm like, great question. Could you give us some topics for right after next week? Right. But yeah, it was just really neat to share some of the things that we've learned along the way from our great community and how that community is built up and things. So enjoyed meeting with you guys, and God's blessings on your work, particularly focused on outreach, using technology means to do outreach. And they've sponsored some really great projects and have a very worldwide vision.
Yep,
so it's really exciting.
A lot of mobile, you know, focused projects in, you know, far-flung places. So
absolutely.
Good work.
Yep. The rest of the community feedback that I have to share came from the great Wells Google Schools Google Plus community. Always great discussion there, and people willing to share their experience. So if you aren't a part of that group, you can just head on over. We'll include a link in the show notes, and you can check out the group and request access to it in the Google Plus area. So first thing came from a question came up about how you explain MAP testing. So MAP testing is the testing, standard achievement type testing that's being used in conjunction with our Lutheran Schools office. So many Wells schools are using MAP, M-A-P testing. And one thing you have to do is explain to parents as you send this information home. So Nate Livingston shared an example letter that he uses with MAP testing and made it public, so we're able to share it as well. Really great explanation that he's written that might be of help to other schools as they're sharing those MAP scores. And then there was a question around what schools use for current events type news related website. Apparently, a website called Channel One News has been very popular. It does a good job of explaining news and is good for different age groups, even in the upper elementary spectrum. And they are going off the air after 21 seasons. I watched a little video, and apparently Anderson Cooper got his start on Channel One News, and now he's on CNN, of course. So they were looking for replacements for Channel One News since it's not going to be produced anymore, and people recommended the site's CNN 10, which is 10-minute video daily explaining the news, basically, and they said they've used that with upper graders. And then another site, News ELA, and that one people said they use the free version of. There's also a pro version, which is very pricey, but they get a lot of great content from the free version of News ELA. So we'll have links to those in the show notes as well.
Timing is good. School's starting.
Yeah, conversations are happening. And the last one to make mention of is from Phil Gustafson, and he asked about bring your own device Chromebooks and if people are allowing that in their schools and how they're managing those Chromebooks, because Chromebooks, in order to be under a Google Apps domain, have to be licensed within that domain. So you have to wipe the Chromebook and bring it under your umbrella, your Google Apps umbrella, and have control over that Chromebook. And that's kind of a strange thing to do with a device that's not owned by the school. And that's what his question was about. And he got a lot of feedback, and it was varied. There were definitely people that said, yes, they do it, and they let the parents know and the students know up front that if they want to go that route, they're going to be wiping the Chromebook and bringing it under their domain and installing software like GoGuardian, for example, was mentioned, testing software like ACT Aspire, things like that. And it's worked well for them. Nobody's complained and things like that. It was an interesting discussion. Other people said, no, they just don't go there. The school owns the Chromebooks, especially at a grade school level. They said that was a better way to go. So I think you could probably go either way, Phil, and have some people that are doing the same thing out in the Wells community. But things to consider, definitely, or at least to communicate well if you are going to do that.
Very good. I see all manner of approaches as I visit schools and our synod schools as well. Mm-hmm. Take different approaches. So good conversation.
Definitely.
Community feedback is always welcome. And the way to do that is to go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and offer your opinion there through many different means. We have a way to log a comment on a particular show. You can click a button there to leave a voicemail. You can click any of the buttons across the top, which includes our own Google group called Wells Tech, where you can join and participate in the conversation there. You can go to Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Digo, bunch of others. And as always, you can send us a quick email, wellstech@wells.net, and you can contact us about anything. We would love to hear your thoughts on the show. Ideas for future topics would be most welcome. as we begin embarking on a new school year, and we've got to figure out what we're doing here. So please take advantage of that and join the conversation. Sally, we have a video of the week, don't we?
We do. Make it worth heading over to wellstech.wells.net to see this one. It is a beautiful hymn, Uncloudy Day, performed by the Martin Luther College Choir. MLC is back in session. They started classes yesterday morning, had an opening service yesterday as well. And we just send our best to the students and professors and support staff there up on the hill in New Ulm at Martin Luther College, and blessings on their new school year. And Uncloudy Day is a great way to send up a special thought for them.
So you now have an MLC alumnus in your family, don't you?
We do. We have a couple, actually. So, yeah.
Right. That's right. So, cool. All right. Very good. That's going to do it for this week. Again, as we mentioned earlier in the show, Chapter 21 coming up next week. So we'll finish off our summer series on Eat That Frog. Thanks again, Sally, for all your work. Enjoy the conversation each and every week. And thank all of you for spending a little time with us each week. We're so glad that you did. And we pray that it's a blessing to you and that you'll come back for more next week. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.